Today's reading is from 2 Corinthians. Therefore, since it is by God's mercy that we are engaged in this ministry, we do not lose heart. But we have this treasure in clay jars, so that it may be made clear to us that this power belongs to God and does not come from us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven into despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, because we know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and will bring us with you into his presence. So we do not lose heart, for this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all measure, because we look not at what can be seen, but what cannot be seen. For what can be seen is temporary, but what can be not be seen is eternal. The word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Thank you. And I invite you to take out your outline for the message this morning. We're completing a three-week series called Audacious Hope. We started on Easter Sunday, and as I often say, the most important thing you might write down on that piece of paper is not what I say, but what you experience God saying to you and whispering to you as we go through the message today. Some years ago, a man named Jim Collins wrote a very wonderful, significant business leadership book called Good to Great. He and his research team studied businesses that had been around for a while, decades, but had somehow managed to break through from a good level of success to a great level. They had been good, but they became great. And the book is basically a compilation of the common characteristics that have been observed in these corporations. One of them was what came to be called by Jim and his research team the Stockdale Paradox. It came about from an interview with Admiral James Stockdale, the same Admiral Stockdale who was Ross Perot's running mate in the 1992 presidential campaign. Many people remember him from that date, but they don't remember what happened years before in his life, how he was a survivor of the notorious Hanoi Hilton prison camp in the Vietnam War. To get ready for the interview, Collins read the book that Stockdale and his wife wrote called In Love and War, in which he chronicled the horrific conditions that he survived. And Collins said, "I got depressed reading the book. I mean, I just couldn't believe somebody could ever make it through that. And all of a sudden, I became aware, wait a minute, I'm about to talk to the guy. He made it. He did get through this." So one of his first questions in the interview is, how? How did you survive that? Stockdale said, "Well, what kept me going is a persevering belief that I'm going to get through this. I'm going to have a future. I'm going to make it." So there was a pause. And then Collins asked, "Well, who didn't make it?" Stockdale said, "Oh, that's easy. The optimist." Well, now Collins is a little confused. He had just described this optimistic attitude that I just believe, I have hope, I'm going to make it. How did optimists then not make it? This is what Stockdale said. The optimists were the ones who said, "We're going to be out by Christmas," and Christmas would come and go. Then they'd say, "We're going to be out by Easter," and Easter would come and go. Then Thanksgiving, and then it would be Christmas again, and they died of a broken heart. Almost identical words to the account of another POW survivor. I reread this week Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl was a survivor of both the Auschwitz and the Dachau concentration camps in World War II. I was amazed in reading that again this week, how he described the exact kind of situation with fellow inmates. He said the highest death rate in the prison camp happened during the week between Christmas 1944 and New Year's Day. He said other inmates just believed that we were going to be free by Christmas. And when that didn't happen, they gave up and died. And then he told of another story. A few months later, a man came to him and confided that he had had a dream in which a voice spoke to him and said, "You're going to be free." And Frankel said to him, "Did this dream voice give you a date?" And the man said, "Yes, March the 30th. The man was full of hope and life. But by the end of March, there was no sign they were going to be free. On March the 29th, he suddenly became ill. On March the 30th, the day of the predicted release, he became unconscious. On March the 31st, he died. What's interesting is that the Dachau prison camp was liberated by Allied forces on April the 29th, 1945, less than a month after he died. There's a verse in the book of Proverbs that says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick." Boy, that's true, isn't it? When you don't see any hope of your situation changing, or that it keeps getting prolonged and prolonged, and you finally just feel like nothing's going to make a difference, it not only makes the heart sick, it makes the body sick. It'll suck the very life out of you. And yet, that's the paradox of hope, isn't it? To have this unwavering belief that I'm going to make it in the presence of confronting brutal realities. That was the Stockdale paradox. In fact, guys, if you're able to fly back to that quote, I may have flown right past it on you. But the Stockdale paradox goes like this: maintain faith that you will prevail, and at the same time confront the most brutal facts of your current reality. Is that what Paul was saying when he wrote the words we heard read a moment ago? "We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed." Is Paul not describing the paradox of hope? To be persecuted, to be crushed, but not give up. No, the truth of the matter is, at some time or another, every one of us will be crushed. Every one of us will be in a perplexing situation. Every one of us will face a time when we want to despair, when we want to give up. What will give us the hope to get through that time? What will give us the hope to face brutal reality, but with a conviction that we're going to prevail? That's what Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. The whole chapter is really about how to build hope in our lives. The funny thing is, Paul never uses the word hope, but it's what he's describing. Let's think about a few things that are described in this chapter that have to do with building a prevailing sense of hope. One of them is this: to let little challenges make us bigger. Let little challenges make us bigger. Now, before looking at the verse from Paul, let me just ask you, right now, can you think of a time recently in your life, some challenge, some hardship that made you question God's goodness? Something that maybe made you want to give up, throw your hands up in the air, made you wonder if God really is faithful after all? And I can imagine right now we're all thinking on lots of different levels. Maybe a grief, a divorce, a loss. Maybe something less, but we know, we admit that, yeah, it did that to me. Now, right now, whatever you're thinking about, I want you to compare that to being in a concentration camp. Now, I'm not saying that to lessen what you've gone through. I'm not saying it to lessen and say that because whatever you've experienced might not be on the level of severity of being in a concentration camp. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that our challenges in life can always get bigger. Our challenges can always get bigger. But the real question is, will we? Will we get bigger? Back in January, I preached a series on depression, and in part of my study for that series, I did a lot of research on learned helplessness. And there have been lots of different classic scientific experiments on learned helplessness. One of them is where two groups of lab mice were placed in tubs where they had to swim. Now, one group of the mice left alone, but the other group, every now and then, the mice would be taken out and held for a moment, and then they'd be put back into the tub. Now, the group that was never touched, they all died within an hour. They drowned. But the group of mice who occasionally got lifted out could swim in one stretch as long as 24 hours. See, our challenges can actually strengthen us and help us understand what it is we actually are capable of doing. I mean, the next time you face a challenge that might make you want to throw your hands in the air and say, I can't do this. I can't handle this. Just go back and remember times before when you might have been tempted to say that and go, now, wait a minute, I did make it through that. God did bring me through that experience. I might be stronger than I give myself credit for. Look again at Paul's words here in 2 Corinthians 4. So we don't lose heart. Even though our outer nature is wasting away, our inner nature is being renewed every day. What's Paul saying? Live long enough, live long enough. That outer nature is going to take a battering. You're going to have some scars. You're going to be kicked in the gut. You're going to suffer some illnesses. If nothing else, you're going to get older and you can't do what you used to anymore. But every setback in life can do something to the inner nature that can make us stronger. Paul describes something else when it comes to building a prevailing spirit, and that is to stay in community. Staying in community is so critical for building hope for our situation. In 2002, 9 Pennsylvania miners got trapped in a mine shaft. It became flooded. And they didn't think they were going to make it. They were convinced, in fact, that they weren't going to make it. They were submerged in the water with just enough room above the water to be able to breathe. But because they were convinced they weren't going to make it, they decided to tie themselves together with a rope because they said, when we get found, let's make sure we all get found. So they did. Well, in fact, they were rescued. An emergency worker said that the reason they made it is because they tied themselves together. They were able to survive the cold temperature by keeping their bodies huddled close. Look again at Paul's words. But we have this treasure in clay jars so that it may be made clear that this extraordinary power belongs to God and does not come from us. Circle the word we right there. Circle the word we. Paul uses the third person plural in chapter 4 38 times. Over and over, it's we. It's like he started speaking French all of a sudden. What's he saying? He's saying that the way we get through something where we know this isn't about my ability to endure something. This is how God gives me the strength. It's when we are together in it. When we know we've got other people helping us. My question is, who are you tied to right now? Who are you tied to in your life? To make sure that whatever you face, you don't face it alone. That's how we find God's hope. During the season of Lent, for the last number of years now, I've joined a group of guys who meet. That's my Lent small group. I'm not able to meet with them all the time. The time when they meet is not real convenient for my regular schedule, but I changed my schedule in Lent so I can join these guys. And this is a group of guys who are so vulnerable with each other. They are so real, and they have gone through some heavy stuff together. They're going through it right now. And every year when I get back with them, it's like the rope got stronger. It's like the rope got bigger since I was with them the last time. Now, today, if you're not connected with something, I hope you'll look at a group that you can be a part of. You can go to the adult discipleship table in the West Passage and just find out about the groups that Pastor Eric says are going to be starting in the weeks ahead. Maybe you would like to be in a grief group. You've gone through a loss in your life. Kim King's going to start new grief groups in the coming week. We have a men's grief group that meets every week right now. I heard a story this past week about what a difference that made in somebody's life. We all need to be tied together. Then the last thing, and perhaps the most important, for having a hope that can get us through a time when we really don't see any hope, and that is focusing on a purpose. Focusing on a purpose. This was the great contribution of Viktor Frankl's writings. As he observed the inmates who made it and the ones who did it, he said the ones who made it, they had a sense of purpose in the midst of their situation and their challenge. Some years ago, I got to visit the Dachau concentration camp in Munich. And when you go into the entrance, this is what you see. What looks like a barbed wire fence with metal figures that resemble frail bodies attached to it. The reason that has been created is because during the days of the concentration camp, when prisoners got to their breaking point and they gave up, they would often run and jump onto the electric fence and hold it to electrocute themselves. As Viktor Frankl watched this go on with people, he used a psychological term to describe what would happen. When people didn't see any hope that their situation was going to change, he said, that is a provisional existence. You just don't see that things are going to change. And maybe you know what it's like to live a provisional existence. Something's going on, and it's gone on for so long. You're giving up hope. But then Frankl reminds us of the definition of the Latin word finis, finis, F-I-N-I-S. It has one meaning in Latin that we would understand, to finish, to end, to complete something. But in Latin, it also has another equal meaning, and that is to have a goal to accomplish. And then this is what Frankl writes. A person who could not see the end of a provisional existence was not able to aim at an ultimate goal in life. See, Frankl says no matter what's going on, there's one thing that can never be taken away from us, and that is the freedom to choose how we go through that time. And we can always choose to look for a purpose and to look for a meaning and what God can do with us right now, and to even let God be the decider of that. You see, hope is a serendipity. A serendipity is something that comes into our lives when we did not make that thing our object. Sometimes when we focus on hope and we say, God, I need some hope because I need you to change the situation in my life right now. And the longer we go without anything changing, the more our hope goes away, right? But when we exercise that freedom to choose, like Frankl talked about, that right now, as bad and despairing as things are, I can choose to focus not on my hope, but on other people and what I can do to help them. It's amazing how we discover hope coming into the picture. Our situation might not have changed, but we can now face it with hope. Paul talked about this. Paul talked about all of his crushing defeats in his life, and then he told people, but this is why I persevere. We believe, and so we speak, because we know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and will bring you into his presence. See, Paul said, you want to know why I suffer these things? It's because I believe God's given me a purpose to do. That's why I'm here. And I focus on doing my purpose, whatever the situation is. If I'm in prison, I'm going to focus on bringing hope to the prisoner. If I'm facing death, I'm going to focus on how can I give hope to my executioners. I'm going to focus on bringing hope no matter what. So I want to end this series and I want to end this message today by encouraging you to think about ways to speak hope, like Paul talked about. There are lots of ways we can give hope. We can work in a soup kitchen. We can serve in a ministry somehow, but I want to think about speaking hope. And I want to think about how God would use us to speak words of hope to somebody else. You'll find in your bulletin this morning a card advertising the next worship series. Guess what? This is not for you. This is for you to give away. This is for you to think about somebody you could go to and say, I want to invite you to join me next Sunday or in one of the upcoming Sundays. Here's what we're going to be doing in worship. Would love to have you be with me. You might be going through a really tough time right now, and all of your thoughts are just consumed with what you're walking through. This might be your get-out-of-jail-free card to get some escape from your own prison. And, okay, who is somebody else I can go through? And discover maybe hope is a serendipity, that it comes along when you don't make it the object. What's the importance of speaking hope to people? 15 years ago, I was in a church and learned about the relative of one of my members. She had been thinking about taking her life. In fact, she's doing more than thinking. She took a pistol one day and a notepad and drove her truck out of town, and she set to write a note to her family to explain why she was doing this before she was going to shoot herself. As she's writing the note, she could not get out of her head a promise that she made to this member of the church. This person kept saying to her, something's different about you. The gleam in your eye is gone. I want you to join me in worship. Please, one Sunday. She wore her down. And finally she said, okay, I'll go with you to church. Just don't bring it up again. So here she's sitting writing her suicide note, and the only thing that kept her from pulling the trigger was going, I made a promise. So she decided, I'll go fulfill my promise, and then I'll come back and do this. So she came to church one Sunday. She sat on the last seat in the last row of the balcony. In fact, I can see some people on the last row up there this morning. I hope that's not a statement about what's going on for you today. Whatever happened in worship that day, it made her not carry out her act. So she came back the next week. She sat one row closer. The next week, one more row closer. Finally, she was on the floor. A member of our praise team saw her. She used to sing in a honky-tonk group. He came after the service and grabbed her and said, we need you up here. You've got a great voice. He started hounding her. She ended up singing in the group. There was no blinding light experience. But over several months, hope pumped into her heart again. And she rededicated her life to Jesus Christ. And one Sunday, I had her tell her story as a part of the message. Now, it gets even better. It's kind of like the ad on TV. But wait, there's more. So she's telling her story, and in the first service that morning, I notice a visitor in the church, and I knew he was a visitor because he was wearing a suit. And then he came back for the second service. And then he came back for the third service. And I thought, what is wrong with this guy? Nobody goes to church three times unless they're a pastor in the service. And I found out why. He had tried to take his life 2 weeks before. And one of the members of our church who worked with him kept inviting him to church. And one night, our member became so worried, he said to his wife, I don't know why. I'm concerned about Paul. I've got to go check on him. Drove to his house. The lights were dark. His car was in the driveway. He kept pounding on the door. No answer. He kicked the door in. He found him on the floor. He'd taken an overdose of drugs. Got him to the hospital. He made it through. He said, I don't know why I made it, but I guess I need to honor the request of my friend who saved my life. I'll go to church with him one Sunday. He was there on that Sunday. And he said, how did anybody know my story? How did anybody know to prompt that woman? Well, we didn't, of course, but somebody did. Imagine how I felt when I returned to that church some years after I had moved to another congregation, and singing and the praise team were both of these people shoulder to shoulder. Now, hearing that right now, you probably feel a little hope pumping in your heart, like maybe there really is a God. And maybe that God actually does care about people like me. And maybe, that God gets involved in our lives from time to time, just maybe. But I want you to think about somebody else. I want you to think about somebody else who might be crushed or perplexed right now. Who is somebody you know? You could do something as simple as taking a card to them and say, hey, come and join me for church. Maybe you would say, hey, I think you're an unsung hero. As I look at what you do for other people, I want to consider you an unsung. Come to this service. Join us next week. You have no way of knowing the implications of an invitation, of what God can do to change the direction and to pump some hope into the heart of a person who is living a provisional existence. I hope we'll all think about right now, who are people on our hearts that we'll go out of here, we'll contact them, we'll go by and visit them, we'll give them a card, say, come sit with me. Maybe even take them to lunch, go out on a limb. Do whatever it takes. Unless you're a state trooper and you've pulled somebody over, don't do it then. Don't do it then. But just about under any other circumstance, if it's somebody you know and it's somebody you know trusts you, here's my response. Why not? Why not?